The next case this morning is 523-0091, Carnahan versus Stepping et al. Arguing for the appellant is Douglas Stewart. Arguing for the appellee is Edward McCarthy. Each side will have 15 minutes for their argument. The appellant will also have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Please note only the clerk is permitted to record these proceedings.
Good morning, counsel.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning. We'll first hear from the appellant. Are you ready to proceed?
I am, Judge.
Please state your name for the record and you may proceed.
Good morning. My name's Doug Stewart. I'm here for appellates Ms. Stepping and Ms. Aronico in cause number 5-23-91. This matter revolves around a mistaken boundary line between the two parties, between the appellee and the appellants. The appellee filed an action to quiet title in 2018 against, at the time, Ms. Stepping owned the property, claiming, you know, seeking to quiet title to the disputed boundary line before he ultimately voluntarily dismissed that action in 2019. After that dismissal, Ms. Stepping sold the property to appellant Ms. Aronico. After she acquired title from Ms. Stepping, then the appellee filed a trespass claim both against Ms. Stepping and Ms. Aronico at the time. This time, the claim was solely trespass. There was no action in quiet title. Alternatively, Ms. Aronico, the appellant, filed a counterclaim asserting ownership over the parcel for per adverse possession. Appellee's claim primarily focused on the installment of two improvements. First off, there was a retaining wall that encroached over his boundary line that was later determined to be installed somewhere between 2006 and 2008. And that was a predecessor to Ms. Stepping that installed that. And then second, Ms. Stepping installed a dog pen in 2018 that just merely crossed the line, maybe by a foot or two.
How much over was the retaining wall?
The retaining wall was a few feet. And I don't have an exact number, but we're talking 3 or 5 feet where it crossed over the boundary line. And then there was a corner of the driveway that was on the appellant side of the retaining wall that also encroached across that line. And this is evident by surveys performed by appellee at the time and a second survey done by the appellants in 2019. And that those surveys are entered into the record. So it's a mere minor encroachment. The true discrepancy here, judges, is the issue is there's a quadrant line. It's a section 21 quadrant line. And effectively what the parties are disputing is the appellee is saying that the boundary line is the quadrant line itself. What the appellants are stating is that line is actually encroached north, a matter of somewhere between 8 and 20 feet based on where this mulberry tree is located. From 1996, when the appellee, and forgive me, I'm kind of going off my scripted argument. I'm kind of ad-libbing a little bit.
Well, that's what oral argument is, isn't it?
I don't
when we start asking questions.
And I enjoy the questions. I prefer those. But when he acquired the property in 1996, up until the 2015 survey, the appellee believed that the mulberry tree was the line. From the mulberry tree to that section 21 stone is where he acted as if he owned everything south of that, the appellates and their predecessors owned, everything north of that, he owned. During that period from 1996 until 2015, there's a series of improvements that are done by these predecessors of interest. There's the installation of a retaining wall. The driveway obviously is rocked and paved to some extent, and that encroaches onto that section of the ground. They park their vehicles on it. At one point, there's a recreational vehicle that's parked on that side of the boundary line. They're installing yard ornaments. Of course, Ms. Stepping installs this dog pen that merely crosses this line. There's a light pole. The light pole has a street light that the appellates pay for electricity to have that light activated for, you know, $18 a month or something along those lines. And then we have this debate over who was maintaining the vegetation. And the appellee states that up until the 2015, he covered everything north and the appellants covered everything south. And that included grass cutting, cutting down bushes that were outside of the perimeter of the house. And ultimately, we get to this dispute over who's supposed to cut down this dead tree that is in this disputed tract of land. And appellants claim that they maintained that property through that whole course. And it's well, and again, it's well beyond just mere grass cutting. It's covering significant improvements. And the case law actually says sometimes with these minor, I think it's maybe it's Justice McKinney, like you have a farm outside of town. And a lot of these disputes are farmers are there's a movement of a fence or a ditch or something along those lines. And we're only talking a mere 10 or 15 feet between the two. And that's similar to what has happened here. But as we go through the testimony, starting it as early as 1992, we've got a history of a discrepancy of that quadrant line and what the possession line is. And appellant surveyor, Surveyor Maxwell, he actually detailed going through that survey history through time. And in 1992, you can see that that possession line starts to push up a little bit. And that's where we start to see our discrepancy. That is reinforced in a 2000 survey done by Koch, because there's a lawsuit in 1995 that's adjacent property owners fighting over the same boundary line, that they also detailed that that boundary line is now pushed up, that possession line, which is significant for us here. So when Mr. Carnahan, the appellee, files his claim in 2020, we've already got history dating back to 1992 that possession line is already moved up. The 2015 survey that he did, actually, he learned that he owned 8 feet below where that mulberry tree was originally located. So we get this secondary triangle that is created. And the appellee is obviously trying to claim ownership of that. And that's where all these trespasses occurred, where the retaining wall is located, where the dog pen is located. Again, it's just this small little sliver of a triangle. The trial court, where I think the trial court erred, is they found that, first off, the 20-year statutory period doesn't begin until he learns that he owns the disputed parcel of land, which of course occurred in 2015. And that goes directly against case law that's long been established, dating back to, I think, the Daly case is a 1907 case that says that the knowledge of the title holder, whether he knows that he owns the land or doesn't own the land, is inconsequential. And it's definitely not dispositive to the case. If he had the ability, if the possession was obviously adverse to his interest and open notorious, the fact that he didn't do anything to investigate his ownership is effectively on him, and he loses title. The other area where the trial court below messed up is they said because that possession occurred before he knew he had ownership, he effectively gave permission for the appellants to use the land because he didn't object to them using it during the time frame. In the Dunnett case, which I think is a 1948 case, that the Supreme Court there, they were fighting, there was a sidewalk that was installed between two buildings. And they said that the installation of the sidewalk, they said that the lack of knowledge of ownership is not dispositive. And then secondly, evidence that it's not permissive is the fact that as soon as he learned he had title, he objected to the title and tried to eject them. And I want to draw, there is a Fourth Circuit court case where they accident that a little bit better.
In the fourth district,
yeah, the fourth district had a case under McNeil, and the way I really like the way they worded the case law there. What they state in that case is you cannot give permission to use land that you don't think you own. And that's effectively what the trial court below said. By Mr. Carnahan not objecting to Ms. Stepping and Ms. Aronico and the three or four owners of the property before they took title, using that land, that affected to him giving permission to use it, even though he didn't believe he owned it. And again, it's the Fourth District applying that Supreme Court precedent that basically says, again, if you don't know you own it, you're not going to say you don't have any authority to get permission for someone to use it. Shortcut back a little bit. I think the trial court erred on those two principles of law. First off, the appellee never gave permission. And the fact whether he gave permission or didn't give permission is only isn't relevant because by that point he didn't have title of the property. The possession began as early as 1992, and definitely no later than 1996. So by the time he brought his action in 2020, he had already lost title and permission is irrelevant at that point. And again, that's based on the principle that the 20-year statute of limitations as codified under the statute begins to run when the encroachment or the entry upon land initially occurs. And I'm going to again argue that it occurred prior to 1992. And I ran through that really fast, so feel free to slow me down and ask questions.
The issue of punitive damages and all that.
Well,
the finding of adverse possession. Doesn't the court have to resolve that issue first before it can turn to the trespass issue?
Well, if the adverse possession goes in favor of the appellants, the award of damages is moot because there would be no damages for the trespasser. And actually, the appellants would have the ability to file for damages against the appellee. In terms of assuming that this court doesn't agree that the appellants have established adverse possession, the award of damages is problematic for two reasons. First off, there's actually no evidence in the record whether or not what those amount of damages are. There was an exhibit in the trial binder, but that exhibit was never entered into the evidence. So it's actually not a part of the total record. Secondly, the award is excessive for two reasons. First off, it includes all the legal fees that are associated with the 28 case that he dismissed and walked away from. It also includes claims against Ms. Aronico that he ultimately was unsuccessful on. Ms. Stepping, and the judge's opinion solely rested on whether or not Ms. Stepping could, the cost of moving the fence by Ms. Stepping if it was determined that she didn't own the land. And she testified that the person that installed the dog pen, which is just one of those chain link fence little squares, he said he would move it if it ultimately was determined that she didn't own the land. But Ms. Stepping, during the pendency of the 2018 case, had a survey commissioned that refuted the appellee's position. So therefore, she was acting under a claim of right in claiming that she owned it and refusing to move the fence. You effectively, again, had these competing surveys. So a punitive damage for $46,000 on a case that arguably should have been resolved under the first one that the appellee ultimately walked away from is far excessive. And most of the cases that I looked through were closer to a $5,000 or $10,000 damage award. And those were even looking at, you know, A, it covered the attorney's fees, but then even looked at the issue of punitive damages to begin with. Because again, she wasn't trying to be abstinent. She had a effective boundary survey that said she owned the property.
Do you believe the appellee's brief concedes that the damages issue was improperly decided?
I do believe it does, Your Honor. Yeah, he does acknowledge that the damages issues was not brought before the court.
Both the nominal and the punitive?
Correct, Your Honor. Yeah, neither issue was either briefed or testimony proffered. And we even had discussions in the record to where we were reserving that for a separate hearing to occur after the fact, once ownership was ultimately determined by the trial court.
My understanding is that your clients not only had surveys, but they also went to the St. Clair County Mapping Department. They talked to the Supervisor of Assessments Office. They talked to the Treasurer and had maps printed out showing, at least from the county's perspective, that your clients were the proper owners of the disputed property. Is that accurate?
That is accurate, Your Honor. And I have to concede here that those are GIS aerial maps, and those are not necessarily legally binding on who the owners of the property are. But from an aerial view, it does depict that. And then if you look at what the parcels are, there's an 18 wide foot strip of land that is parcel number 2 for the appellants. That strip of land was actually determined as part of this discrepancy in the boundary lines over the decades. I believe it was Mr. Jones or Mr. Jackson. It was from the time Mr. Carnahan acquired the property initially. One of those owners of the Stepping property realized that this 18-foot strip of land was available for back taxes because no one knew that no one had owned it. So he went and acquired the title from the county for back taxes, which actually upset the appellee because he didn't know it was available for sale. And I think that's evidence that there was a lot of dispute as to where that boundary line was between where the quadrant line and where that possession line ultimately was. And you can follow under Surveyor Maxwell, that goes all the way down to the far end of that far stone. That boundary line keeps kind of jumping back and forth along the way.
I thought one of your clients was paying the property taxes on the disputed property and also had a security light installed or was paying for a security light on that property as well.
There is a utility light on it, and we have evidence from Ameren that they were paying for the street light at the time. And there was title paperwork that ultimately was objected to that wasn't entered into the record, that the predecessor was also paying a light for the light bill on that pole. So I do have utility payments associated with the use of the street lamp at it. That goes in favor of the appellants, in my opinion. And any more questions before I yield my time, judges?
I have no other questions.
No questions.
All right. Thank you, counsel. We'll now hear from the appellee. Name for the record, and you may proceed.
Thank you, sir. My name is Edward McCarthy. I'm counsel for the appellee, Charles Carnahan. And we have to keep in mind, obviously, burdens of proof and those kind of details here. But it is clear that my client was the owner of this property, period. As it's often referred to in the appellate court cases, the title holder. Now, the title holder is has the right to eject anyone who is occupying the property without his permission. The hustle of this case that has come up is this Mr. Maxwell's intrusive, literally, appraisal or surveys in which he moves a old property line with no decisions about that old property line having to do with the history of either my client's property or the defendant's property.
But didn't Judge Katz find in favor of your client on the property line?
Yes, sir. Okay. Yes, sir. She did. And she did properly because of the surveyors we presented located the boundaries of the property lines under the usual meets and bounds descriptions that had been used for the entire history of these parcels. There is no history whatsoever of any of those parcels referring to an old possession line. That's of no significance to this case. As a matter of fact,
where are these properties?
I'm sorry, where are the properties? They're St. Clair County and I forget, O'Fallon area, I believe.
In the city?
Yes, sir.
I'm a little confused why there are meets and bounds within the city.
Well, okay, then it's not in the city. I was wrong on that because they are township properties in the township. Forgive me, I don't remember what township they're part of, but because the legal description that are part of the argument that Mr. Maxwell was making involved of actions that were taken by properties that are not adjacent, but they're close, who were forming a subdivision for the purposes of having the subdivision rights and organization. And that had nothing to do with my client's property. As a matter of fact, Mr. Stewart talked about the transfer from Ms. Stepping to Mr. Ronico, even though, and he's claiming that Ms. Stepping was claiming this property all along, according to the description that was found by or determined by Mr. Maxwell. But Mr. Maxwell never wrote a legal description to describe what these parcels were, never gave us a survey of any kind of diagram. Not only that, when she, Ms. Stepping, transferred to Ms. Aronico, after receiving all these reports from Maxwell, that it's clear from opposing counsel that that's what they were relying on, she never referred to, in any sense, the legal or any of the documentation saying that, well, yes, I'm transferring this, my property, which has this legal description. However, this is wrong. The legal description should be XYZ. That's never done. And here they're trying to say that that the legal description is wrong, that they've owned, that she owned the property even 8 feet north of her line, but she never transferred that when she was selling to Ms. Aronico. So, you know, there's my client was the title holder and remained the title holder all the way through all of this property issue. Then when Ms. Stepping, still being the owner, put the fence in, it just protruded multiple inches, maybe a foot, for a distance of 20 feet onto my client's property that he that was, and that's in the surveys that's before the court. And she was told by the man, by the chap who put in that fence, shoot, if you want to move it, I'll move it, no charge. She had an opportunity to move that fence a foot back onto her own property and not have this lawsuit filed. This, nothing would have happened here.
So this was triggered by the dog bin?
Yes, sir.
Not the retaining wall or the other issues?
Well, the retaining wall, no, the retaining wall was added just because it did intrude. And I wanted to take a shot at that, but the court was right.
Before you say, go into anything else, I do want to quickly address the damages. You do concede the damage issue, that it should go back for hearing on damages?
Yes, sir. We agreed that we would have a hearing on damages, that all three, the counsel and the judge, in a meeting right before we wrote all our stuff up, that we would have a hearing on damages. Yes, sir.
And so it came as a surprise to you when you had a judgment that you received that included the damages?
Well, frankly, I must have forgotten that we agreed on that, because I wouldn't have put it in my final argument if I had remembered that it was going to be decided later. So that was, I was certainly pleased with the judgment, and but when it was pointed out by opposing counsel in this appeal, I just do have to concede that yeah, oh, we did agree to that, and that was incorrect step to take in this case.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, I really don't have anything else. You know, basically, my client was the title holder. No, nothing until they put this little pen, dog pen, on his property. Nobody took any steps to keep him out, to take aggressive actions to claim the property away from him. And so that, I think that's a large part of the rationale of the court, as he was a title holder, he was always a title holder, and he had a right to bring this action.
And this dispute is about what 8 inches on one end and a foot and a half on the other?
If that fence would have been moved, we wouldn't have filed a suit.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
How do you explain the retaining wall that was placed on the property in 2008?
How do I explain that? That was the retaining wall is only on the property by a few inches. There's a picture of it that we had taken that shows that essentially the middle of the retaining wall, which is a brick width kind of thing, is about what intruded into the property. The retaining wall is not all the way along across the property line. The edge of the final edge of the retaining wall intrudes. My client did not know for sure that intruded on his property until the survey. So that was done by a previous owner, not by misstepping.
Thank you.
Any other questions, Justice Vaughn?
No, I did want to make note, our clerk, Mr. Flood, indicated that Mr. McCarthy tomorrow will be celebrating 50 years of practice in law. Just want to congratulate him on that.
Oh, thank you, sir. Yeah, it's been an adventure. I told him this feels like kindergarten after being before this court so many times through the years, to be doing it like completely differently.
Well, next month we're going back to live court.
Oh,
we have our construction complete now.
Well, very good. I look forward to that. Although I don't have anything pending.
Well, I remember when we started practice that we started out with legal-sized documents, and we bring a lot of changes. Carbon paper, writers back then, and it was a whole different matter to write a brief.
Yeah, but before fax machines, before the Lord.
Any other questions, Justice McKinney?
No questions.
Rebuttal.
Mr. McCarthy, congrats. I didn't know about your anniversary. That's super cool.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure to have you on the other side of this. I want to, there's a couple points that Mr. McCarthy hits on, and I want to draw the justice attention to, it's Roller versus Logan Landfill. It's a 74th case. Again, it's out of the 4th District, and that case kind of focuses on the concept of continuous and uninterrupted use under an adverse possession claim. The appellee, up until that 2015 survey, we've got 19 years of history of him thinking that line is 8 to 10 feet north of where it is under the 2015 survey.
Let me ask you about that for a second before you get too deep into that. My understanding, some of the testimony was that when it came time to mow the yard, they just kind of took turns. Whoever mowed it first mowed a little extra to get on the other side. Does that interrupt the possession?
I don't think it does, Judge, and for a couple reasons. First off, we don't have clear testimony on when that, who's fighting over who's mowing the grass happened. Did that occur after the 20-year statute elapsed? Was it him and was it Mr. Carnahan and Ms. Stepping, and Ms. Stepping's son did most of the yard mowing based on the testimony? Was this after title had already shifted? So effectively, he's trespassing by mowing the Carnahan or the Stepping property at this point, because again, I think that title shifted in 2012, not in 2015 or 2020 when the judge entered her order. But the way the case law reads is effectively the interruption has to be enough that it changes the mind of the possessor. So did Mr. Carnahan mowing the grass from time to time shift the mindset of Ms. Stepping that she didn't own the ground? And I'm going to argue no, based on her testimony. She continued to mow the grass as if it was hers the whole time. And then there's obviously conversation on during certain periods of time where he didn't mow that grass at all. And all the other neighbors were kind of just mowing where they thought the line was with no objection from Mr. Carnahan during the sequence.
So is it your position that just Katz's finding on the property line is against the manifest weight of the evidence?
Absolutely, I do, Your Honor. Yeah, and especially the Judge Katz's opinion does not only takes into account the grass cutting. She doesn't factor in, and Mr. Maxwell does a great history of the boundary lines. I think he, of the three surveyors that testified, he was the most detailed surveyor to explain what this history of the parcel was. But what Judge Katz didn't get into is she just disregarded the retaining wall, saying it was outside the five-year statute of limitations for trespass. I don't think she factored that retaining wall into the possession of the property by Stepping and her predecessors in interest. And then again, we have retaining wall, we have driveway, we have parking vehicles on it, we have recreational vehicles, we're cutting down trees, we're trimming bushes, we're cutting grass, all this over a sequence of effectively 25 years. And we're Judge Katz effectively said, well, he started mowing grass in the last 5 years, so no harm, no foul. And that's not the way the adverse possession doctrine runs. Once you lose title, title is lost. And the fact that he started mowing the grass in 2015, when he realized that that was now his property, I think he, at that point, he was already SOL.
What do you think is the import of the retaining wall? Is that a primary factor, or just one of many?
I think it's one of many, but I think it's significant because I consider that to be a permanent improvement. I mean, it's one thing to cut grass, right? Like we all cut grass, and every once in a while you might go a strip or too far. But a retaining wall is a permanent improvement. When you put that in, you're expecting that to be there for probably 25 years, depending on whether it's stone or wood, obviously. So I put a lot of credence into they made a permanent improvement to that land. And then additionally, and I appreciate I'm almost out of time, if you correlate where the house for Ms. Stepping and Ms. Aronico's property is in relation to that boundary line, you creep this absurdity that they effectively built the house on the boundary line, and that would have violated setbacks and everything else that would have been in place at the time the house was built. And you had asked where it's located. It is located in the city of Fairview, but it's also located in Caseyville Township. And the fact that it's in the township doesn't negate the instance that it's located in the city of Fairview. And any final questions before I yield?
What do you think the strongest part of your argument? I'm sorry. What do you think the strongest part of your argument is? Is it that his lack of knowledge that it was his property is contrary to Judge Katz's finding, that she found that was a factor that
I think
that worked in his favor? You say the case law is opposite of that. Is that the gist?
100%. I think it's opposite of that, Justice Vaughn. I do think that his knowledge, one way or the other, has no bearing whether or not the appellants established adverse possession. The fact that we have history, again, dating back to 1992, that there was a possession line established that Mr. Carnahan effectively validates during his testimony, because he stated as soon as he bought the property, he started challenging where the line was. And then that line continued. He just thought that line was north than where it was determined in 2015. So at minimum, I think there's two parcels here that we're fighting over. There's the initial 8 feet that goes to the mulberry tree that I think he lost no matter what. And then there's that portion above that mulberry tree that we can argue maybe he maintained that by cutting the grass like he did. But because all the main improvements happened below that mulberry tree.
Any other questions, Justice Vaughn?
Other questions, thank you.
Justice McCaney?
Nothing further, thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The court will take the matter under advisement and issue its decision in due course.
Thank you, Justice. Thank you, sir. It was a pleasure.